A quick content warning before the episode starts. The content of this episode talks a bit about suicide, given that it is integral to the narrative of this episode and some character arcs there. So my fellow hosts and I will be discussing suicide at some length within the context of this episode. Hello and welcome to the Death of the Roman Republic's review of the 2005 HBO original series, Rome.
I have a prediction for this episode. Evander Polkio is coming back.
Interesting. I like where your head's at.
Alrighty, guys. HBO's Rome, Season 2, Episode 10, De Patre Vostro, About Your Father, Believe It or Not, is the series finale, and we are here to review it today. So, gents, let's get into it. What say you?
You saying that name, I didn't think of the title until I watched the end of the episode. And
literally 10 minutes ago. Yeah.
Wait, you finished it that recently?
I finished it 4 minutes before we first logged in. I had to sleep. I'm gone 3 hours of sleep, so.
We open the episode with the Battle of Actium. Done. Dead. The aftermath of the last civil war and battle for the soul of the Roman Republic occurs off screen. Bold choice! Verinus is on a boat with Antony as servants row for them. Many are injured. One is dead and thrown overboard. Antony looks sad at the water, lost in thought. Verinus gets him to drink some water. The boat is rocking up and down constantly as Antony looks at the setting sun. All my life I've been fearful of defeat, and now that it's come, it's not nearly as terrible as I expected. Sun still shines, water still tastes good, glory is all well and good, but life is enough. Nay, he took it pretty well, I think.
Less than 2 minutes into this episode, we get that beautiful speech from Antony. I was like, oh my god, we're hitting the gates running.
Yeah, absolutely.
We talked about in the previous episode how Antony had started to express some vulnerability around Verinus more so than any other character, and I think that it is carrying over into this opening monologue.
The newsreader announces that Octavian and Agrippa defeated Cleopatra and her slave Mark Antony at Actium, and the Egyptian fleet has been destroyed. Octavian is pursuing them to Alexandria. Lydia and Verina the Elder hear this, and they leave at that news. Livia is holding court with the upper class women around Octavian's life. She says that Cleo and Antony fled the battle as soon as it started. Octavia says that Antony isn't a coward, but Cleo and Antony were merely protecting the gold stored on Cleo's boats and that they intended to still fight. Livia says, well, that's what Octavian told me. And Octavia says, well, Octavian's a liar. Adia, lost in thought, says she's probably to blame for how Octavian turned out. Super good.
Self-realization at long last.
Indeed.
Something that I also made note of, and I don't know if anyone else noticed this, I think this is the first time that the newscaster is not necessarily below everyone, but he's not standing up on like this high like soapbox pedestal to be giving the news updates. Everyone's kind of crowding around him, and it's kind of almost arena-like. Obviously not in an arena, but just very crowd arena looking like.
What do you think that says about him and his position and Rome?
Very less relevant, but I also just made note of it that it's the first time
I just wanted to look into it, see if you had any deeper thoughts about it.
No, it was something that I noted. We had not seen that on Rome before.
I'll note, I was scared we wouldn't see him again. We got him. So I was happy.
It's I might be jumping the gun here. It is a travesty that Posca and Jocasta did not appear this episode. I mean, like, Jocasta for fan service, but like Posca not being in the series finale. He's been like there since the beginning. Anyway.
I'm so angry that you've said that because I have a couple things written down on my least favorite. And
right, I know that there's probably a few people with a few least favorites. Yeah, that's fine. But so, yeah. Anyway, Octavian, Agrippa, Maecenas, and Pollo are told by a messenger that if Cleo is allowed to remain on the throne, Antony will retire from politics and live in Egypt. And Octavian cuts him off and says, Antony and Cleo are to unconditionally present themselves to me. He also says that the messenger should speak to Varinus. Pollo is here, and if Varinus opens the gates to the palace, that he will be safe. Octavian's alternative to Varinus doing this will to be burn everyone down in the palace. Octavian asks Pollo if there is something that they can say so Varinus will trust that Pollo is with them. Pollo says to tell Varinus that his children are well, and Pollo hopes that his child is well also. Octavian kind of looks at him, and Pollo says, it's a private joke. The original two-factor authentication. Inside jokes. Roman soldiers are going through Alexandria. The messenger is raised up by Apollo into an orgy, well in progress, in the palace. Antony and Cleo preside over it, and the messenger relates the message that Antony surrenders without condition. Antony is incensed, but Cleo tells him he has to remain calm. Antony says he'd rather eat his own children than surrender, and Cleo tearfully says they can escape by night to the south. And Antony is nearly crying as he said, and hide under the bushes like hunted animals. Cleo asks if there's another plan, and Antony says, death. And Cleo asks, is there another trick? And Antony says, I'm a soldier, not a magician. Look around us. Whores, hermaphrodites, look spittles. This is our army now. This is what we have left.
Antony's spitting this episode. He gives another beautiful little speech here that you just said. And it's like, oh my gosh, like this guy is... When he's down, he's like so poetic and articulate.
As are most poets, you know. I totally agree, though, Jacob. Like, in my opinion, Antony has like three great soliloquies this episode, and I relate most of all of them. The messenger tells Varinus the special message from Pollo. Varinus laughs and understands that Pollo is in Alexandria. The messenger tells Varinus the deal, and Varinus says to tell Pollo that, yes, his child is well, being Caesarian, but Pollo has forgotten who Varinus is, that he would ever consider betraying his loyalty. The messenger wants Varinus to reconsider, but Antony interrupts. Antony challenges Octavian to single combat. Cleo advises against this, but Antony says Octavians can't refuse. Mark Antony is called the dog out. That's a quote. Antony tells Varinus to fetch weapons so they can practice. Caesarion runs into Varinus and asks if Octavian will kill him. Varinus says that the kid will be all right, but Caesarion reasons there can only be one son of Caesar. Varinus tells him to get with him to the armory, just trying to keep him calm, I guess. Octavian hears Antony's message. The messenger reports that Antony's drunk or drugged, but Cleo is sober and alert, and Varinus is remaining loyal. Agrippa wants to siege, but Octavian knows that'll take too long. Maecenas wants to burn the palace, but Octavian thinks that'll anger the Egyptians. Antony and Varinus spar and practice. Antony is very dramatic and gladiatorial in his actions. The messenger has returned. He passes a message to Cleopatra's personal slave, Charmion, a message for Cleopatra to see alone. The people, the courts, applaud Antony, yet Varinus beats him down. One man laughs. Do I amuse you? Antony says.
That is a
reference to Joe Pesci. What am I? A clown? Funny? Haha.
I hate you, Jacob. I'm kidding. Yes, that is a reference to an improvised line in Goodfellas.
Wait, Jacob, did you guess that?
Yeah, I knew that. I didn't guess it. I knew it.
Have you seen Goodfellas?
Or did you Google it to try to spite me?
No, I didn't Google it. I knew it. I haven't seen Goodfellas, but I knew it. Do I amuse you? Do you think I'm funny? Funny how? Funny ha-ha?
It is a pretty famous quote.
I know. I was just giving you crap, Jacob.
And I had to steal your thunder.
Also, this is actually more relevant to the scene. I actually do like that we get to see a lot of the POV of Mark Antony and how trippy it can get. And it is so interesting to see what these filmmakers thought a high on opium would look like in ancient Rome.
I and not only just high on opium, but like this man is like he is completely broken. Like
high on depression.
Yeah. You might call him low.
Perhaps.
And it's very interesting to see Octavian kind of acknowledge his true enemy at this point, because he has the letter that's read directly to Cleopatra, and it's noted that Cleopatra is sober and alert, and you're like, oh, so Antony's been defeated at Actium, and like Octavian kind of isn't really concerned about him anymore, because like what else does he have? but that Cleopatra still has all of Egypt to be reckoned with. So that's the true enemy.
All right. So Antony is insulted by the guy who laughed at an ill-timed time. Do I amuse you? We see Antony's perspective. His vision is blurring and shifting, as BP and others have noted. The man is scared, but Antony demands he stands and fight. Varinus gives the man a sword and shield. Cleo tries to stop it, lest we forget she shot a deer man in the neck last episode. But anyway, Antony demands he takes a sword. Antony taunts the man, beats him down. Antony and the others laugh as he toys with him. But then the man accidentally stabs Antony, and Antony stabs him right back. And the guy says, "Really, sir, I must protest." And surely that's also a movie reference. Antony screams, "Yes!" And people clap.
After he kills this dude, he insists everyone continues with their hedonism. And yes. Gotta say, real bad vibes for hedonism. It's like he's really killing the mood of this orgy.
The vibe is off.
Antony does notice the messenger. Young Hermes has returned. This is Antony's episode. Anyways, the messenger tells Antony that Octavian refused the one-on-one combat. The terms are the same as before. And if Antony does not accept, the fire and the siege begin tomorrow. Antony tells the guy to shove it and says, "Good lad," and lets him go. Didn't kill the messenger. Good, you know, character. Character growth.
Surprising.
Character development.
Yeah.
Antony rants that Octavian was always a coward, and he angrily notices that people watch him, and that's when he demands they eat, they drink, they play music, and festivities resume. He demands that Varinus drinks, and he's excited to see how a real Roman drinks. Fellas, just, you know, does anyone want to pause here and unpack that scene a little bit?
He does share this moment with Cleopatra right before this, where they basically, like, agree to maybe it's not here, but like they agree that death is an option that is perhaps on the table.
Yeah.
And it's a very rewarding moment for Antony, because right, we see him as very not a stoic figure, because he's definitely very expressive, but you know, very brash and always confident, and then to see him at like his utmost vulnerable-ist with Cleopatra really reinforces how strong their love is for one another and just how close they are. And we don't get any moments like that with Antony really at all, where he's just like bearing his entire soul to someone. And especially never Attia. And so you're like, oh wow, this guy was like, he really, really loves this lady.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing I noted was that it actually really does showcase how smart of a politician Cleopatra is, because I think one thing that the show has been missing that I agree with Cole on from the previous episode, the more I thought about it, was that we had not really seen Cleopatra be the politically savvy person that she was known to be. And I think this episode, for all its faults on where everything ends up in the execution of how they end for her, I think that this moment, because you don't hear her say a whole lot, but she has a lot of things going on in her facial expressions, being like she's thinking, trying to think a few steps ahead.
Yeah. Cleopatra reads Octavian's private letter. Octavian says that he knows Antony led her into the situation, and if she delivers Antony to him, she and her family will keep their kingdom. It's a private deal that literally cuts Antony out if he is served up on a silver platter. Cleopatra cries that it would shame her honor, but her slave Charmian says it's better than death. Cleo gets mad. That's a slave's answer. And Charmian says Cleo knows that she wants to live. Then Antony stumbles in, asking for her to go to the party. He asks if she's sad. Of course I'm sad. Look at you. Look at us. Apollo and Isis. It's pathetic. Antony turns. Cleo says, "I'm sorry. I didn't mean that." And Antony says it's true. That is their situation. Cleo kisses him. "These years together have been the happiest of my life. We lived, didn't we? We did." Great exchange there. Great exchange.
Yes. This, I got ahead of myself. This is the scene I was trying to reference.
Yes, the specific scene where they kind of plan their fates. Antony says Octavian will burn the place down tomorrow. We must decide how to end this and when. Antony asks, why not now? Cleo says, not in the darkness, but tomorrow in the sunlight. Antony asks if she wants to go back to the guests, but Cleo says that she's tired and he can go. Antony says he'll stay for a little while, but Antony passes out there. He and Varinus recount war stories, drunk. Antony asks if Varinus thinks there's an afterlife. Of course, Varinus says, and of course Varinus says that. They go on to insult Greek culture. End of scene.
I have some comments on this scene that I'll save for the end of the series, but it is just, it's lovely to see them commiserating as equals, and, you know, mm-hmm. Just the lovely, hey, f*** them. That's beautiful. And there's nothing that, it feels so everyman, right? That is so true of everyone. We all share in disdain towards some people who wrong us. And we all say that from history till present. And it's poetic.
Tribalism is a beautiful thing.
This also feels like, I think this and the first scene are one of the only times that Antony doesn't throw a snarky comment about or to Varinus, like about him to his face during these two scenes. Because even in the previous episode, when he's kind of opening up a little bit, he still throws a few things at him. And I think that it's just kind of nice to show that even though there's a lot of time that has passed that I wish we could have gotten to see more of how much their friendship grew from the time in Egypt, I think it is kind of nice that in one of their final scenes, they do not throw major verbal insults to each other.
Moving on here, guys. Charmian wakes up Antony. Antony asks what happened as Charmian has blood on her dress. She shows him a scroll with a bloody dagger. It's Cleopatra's suicide note. It reads, I will see you again on the other side. Please come quickly. Antony starts sobbing, convulsing. He covers his face with his robe. Charmian says with her last breath, Cleo called out his name, and Antony tells her to go. Antony rises and talks to Varinus. He is going to kill himself and says, let's use a proper Roman sword. Antony strips and examines Varinus's blade. It's a good place to die at any rate. Could have been a ditch in Gaul. Varinus smiles. Lucius Varinus, iron to the end. Don't you die here with me. You get out while you can, huh? I'll do that. It's been an honor serving with you, sir. Has it? I hope so. Good.
Good stuff.
Antony has Varinus align the blade to his stomach. Varinus asks if Antony has any instructions or messages. Antony says no, then thinks for a moment. Tell the people I died well. I died Roman. Antony grips Varinus' shoulders, then thrusts into him so the sword penetrates him. Varinus and Antony hold each other as Antony gasps for breath. He falls to the ground. Charmian looks on from a distance. Varinus removes the Egyptian clothes from Antony, the makeup, and he puts on his Roman uniform and sets him on the throne. Very powerful image. Cleopatra walks in. Varinus glowers at her. She approaches and steps through Antony's blood. She cries as she looks at him. She kisses his body. Oh, my poor love. Varinus sneers, and Cleo says to bring the children. Cleo faces Varinus. Lucius Varinus wishes to speak. No. Then he shall stop looking at me. Varinus stares at her harder. He says that he doesn't take any orders from her, and she's lucky that he doesn't open up her stomach. Cleo says he should have done the honorable thing and killed himself with Antony, but Varinus says that he had to get Caesarion out. Cleo says Octavian promised they'd be safe, and Varinus explains they'll only be safe to be paraded through Rome's forum in her crown, to be merciful to the children, but that kid Caesarion's gonna get killed. Varinus says that he's not even the son of Caesar, and Cleo says, hey, we don't know that. She asks Varinus, why do you want to save Caesarion? And Varinus says, his father is his friend. He will take Caesarion to him. Cleo asks the man's name, Titus Pullo. She asks, is he a good man? Varinus says, define good.
Which is that's such a real response. I loved that.
Now this is a true Roman. As soon as Cleopatra walks in, Varinus is like, I just want to curse, so I won't. But he basically, you know, is like, no, you have no power over me, and I see your tricks, and you're bad.
It's like, I don't want to say it's like darkly funny or humorous, but there's something about the imagery of this conversation that Cleo and Varinus have where like constantly between them is Antony's slumped over corpse, like presiding over the conversation. It seems like it's a very weird choice that sticks with me. Anyways, Cleo sees the children come in and has them approach Antony. See, by his own hand, that's how nobility dies. Alexander Helios and Cleopatra Selene, the twins, are taken away, and Cleo tells Caesarion he's leaving with Varinus. She cries as he says he wants to be with her. So Varinus and Caesarion move through Alexandria. I will pause there, guys. Antony's death. I mean, how are we feeling? If you have any thoughts.
I think that this honestly makes so much sense for this being the way that he goes out. I know that he is a war person, and obviously dying in battle probably would seem on paper what would be the more fitting end for him in real life. And obviously this is, if I'm not mistaken, it is not 100% known if this is what drove his suicide, correct?
So let me see here, BP. There's no point in like holding back history from you guys now. Antony, it is true that Antony killed himself after he thought Cleopatra was dead, and it is true that he had reason to believe that Cleopatra was dead. The thing is, and what's mildly up for contention is, did Cleopatra knowingly trick Antony into killing himself? Because he did kill himself after thinking Cleo was dead, but how culpable is Cleopatra herself in that, and what were her motivations? And as the show presents, Cleopatra had a deal from Octavian that if Antony was out of the picture, she would hold on to her power.
I'm remembering where I heard what I'm trying to think of now for my question. It was that in the show, Antony doesn't see Cleopatra alive, but there is the speculation that in real life, she walked into the room right as he was dying, and he saw her alive.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. To. That's the version of events I retell in Death of the Roman Republic.
In regards to my vibes on his death, I think it was the correct way for Mark Antony to die, right? If he's not dying at battle, then it's only right that he do the honorable Roman thing and take his own life. And so I think it is a fitting death in that regard. It's deeply heartbreaking for the reason he commits suicide to be because Cleopatra tricks him. Mm-hmm. And really, he gave everything up in life based on his love for Cleopatra. Like, you know, that's basically what started this entire war, or at least was the scapegoat reason for it, was that, oh, she has turned him into an Egyptian citizen instead of a Roman.
Yeah.
And so it is frustrating and sad for that reason, but it is at least a good death for a sometimes good man.
Cool. I feel like this death was very in line with Antony's character. It was super emotional. But I will talk about it a little more later on.
Bum, 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 bum.
Okie doke. Octavian enters Cleopatra's palace. This entire scene, Octavian is barely holding back a sneer. They play verbal chess. Octavian offers and Cleo accepts condolences. They shall be friends. And Octavian says she would honor him by accompanying him to Rome immediately. And Cleo realizes he's not asking, and it is being set up as Varinus had said, that they are going to be paraded in chains as prisoners, surrendered totally to the might of Rome. And Cleo realizes she cannot say no to Octavian. And I'll pause here again, guys. How did you feel about this scene? If you have any thoughts.
It felt icky. I did not know what was happening. I was like, they aren't flirting, are they? No, they're not. Yeah, it was bizarre, and I definitely got the vibe that Octavian had other things in mind and was maybe not going to keep his word anyway. So yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Cleopatra sobs and stumbles as she walks into the palace. She looks at Antony's bloody stains on the floor and to his body. I'm sorry, my love. She sits at Antony's knee. You were right about that boy. Cleo has realized Octavian's true intentions and crawls into Antony's lap, forces his arm to hug her. She did it for nothing. Please don't be angry with me, she tells his body. Cleo tells Charmion to get the old woman. Octavian and the boys meet. Maecenas objectifies Cleo. Agrippa says they should have taken her then in case she follows Antony. Octavian says that he was all charm, and Maecenas implies that makes people want to kill themselves.
And, charm itself, Maecenas says to Octavian.
Yeah,
poor Octavian. That's not great for the old confidence.
Indeed, yeah. And the thing is, it gets under his skin so much, he sends like his entire army back into the palace to make sure that didn't occur. It does. The old woman presents Cleo with poisons. Cleo wants a snake so that her body won't bloat. She tells Charmian to make sure the children are safe before she follows her. Pretty dark. Cleo tells the snake to bite her breast, and she gasps as she feels the poison course through her.
Snake check, everyone. Snake check. Remember earlier in the season when we had a bag of corn snakes that were allegedly dangerous snakes? Well, I've got great news, everybody. I don't know what type of snake this is. This concludes snake check.
It's supposed to be an asp.
It is supposed to be an asp. Oh, I don't know what it actually is either. Yeah.
Roman soldiers run into the throne room. Polo and Octavian see Cleo wheezing. Octavian approaches as Cleo rises and laboriously tells him that he has a rotten soul. She collapses in her seat, grabs Antony's hand, and dies. Agrippa asks what she said, and Octavian says that he has a rotten soul. Agrippa's like, oh. Octavian separates their hands and demands the children be found, and Polo finds Rhaenys's portrait of Niobe Cole.
I just wanted to ask if, because it really feels like the whole Octavian going in there and being in the room when she dies, that feels like a movie, like television thing. Like I feel like that's probably not what actually happened, but I wanted to ask.
I am 99% sure that you are right, but let me go ahead and check my notes from back in the day. Jacob.
After Octavian hears Cleopatra say that, did anyone else feel like that really, really hit him? Like, it deeply affected him?
Yes. These last couple episodes, the little remarks of people just get under Octavian's skin so much. Whereas, again, before, I feel like that doesn't reflect his character. But
yeah, that's actually that's something I want to touch on at the end, too. But yeah, I lost my train of thought again.
Go ahead. Agrippa, welcome back. The moment where Agrippa asks, what did she say? And Octavian repeats it. And Agrippa's just, oh, that is my funniest moment.
I refound my thought. So when Octavian hears this and reacts, I wrote down that it to me, looking at him, it seemed like he was thinking something to the extent of, why do we play this game? You know, why are we all here? Why is this going on? You know, why am I, Octavian, doing what I'm doing? Why do these people have to die? You know, why am I perceived as a man with a rotten soul when I am doing just what I think should be done? And it begs the question that many a war begs, doesn't it?
It makes me think back to what Adia said about, like, he used to be like a good boy, and it's like, it's probably me that ruined that. So like, maybe like it's something where like Octavian is like, he thinks at one point he was a good person, and this is kind of like a maybe like a shock of like he's not, even though he knows that, but maybe just like hearing someone like say that with their dying breath, maybe that like has more of an effect on him than it otherwise would.
Cole, Cleopatra, Octavian wasn't in the room for that to be prevented. I think some Roman soldiers may have walked in though, but also, do you think that if Cleopatra hadn't said he had a rotten soul, that he would not have immediately separated their hands in death afterwards? Because it's like maybe I'm a bad person. He's like, let me do this cruel thing and not honor her last action. Octavian states that Varenus took Caesarion, men turn loyalty into a vice. Such a great line. Octavian lays reclined. He seems agitated, and Octavian says he would forgive Varenus, and Polo reasons that I should probably go find Varenus, right? And Octavian's like, yeah, way to pick up on the implication. Varenus and Caesarion hang out. Caesarion says he will reward Varenus once he's restored to the throne. Varenus tells him, best to forget about that. Caesarion says that he won't permit any more of Varenus's sad talk. That's what I've been saying all season, Caesarion. Let's see, Caesarion also says they're never going to go camping again. They hear something approach. Caesarion gets spooked, but it is Pullo approaching on a horse, and he hugs Varinus. First time they've seen each other in 7 years. What's up, Cole?
My funniest moment of the episode is just Caesarion.
He's
a funny little brat. He's a funny little guy.
It is. See, it for me, it's funny up to a point, but then, like, Caesarion's antics make me quite sad in the end. Anyway, Pullo approaches Caesarion. Caesarion's like, "Who is this man? Titus Pullo. I don't like his manner. Handsome, isn't he?" Great exchange. Oh, man. Pullo says that Cleo killed herself and Caesarion is upset. He starts to walk a little bit farther away and starts crying. Pullo and Varinus let him cry it out. Pullo draws a map of the situation. Their only good way out is south. Varinus says that he won't accompany them all that way, maybe go to the east. Pullo says that they probably won't make it out of Egypt alive, and he gives Varinus the portrait of Niobe. Varinus asks how the children are, and Pullo reports that Varina the Elder is at Temple with Lydie. Lucius is an apprentice stonemason. Stonemason, now that's a decent trade! Kid wants to be a soldier, though. Pullo, of course, is not encouraging him, and Varina the Younger is a little tiger who runs the tavern and keeps people in line. Varinus looks a little sad. He asks about Gaia, and Pullo says that didn't end so well. Leaves it at that. Caesarion sleeps.
It's an interesting dynamic between Pullo and Caesarion, isn't it? Because on one hand, Pullo is his father, and Pullo is aware of that. But on the other hand, he's so brazenly and uncaringly is like, "Oh yeah, your mom's dead." It's like, yeah. Wait, that's your son, and you're just okay, sure, man. I mean, it's a very Pullo way of doing things, but it's just funny.
Classic Pullo. Alexander Helios and Cleopatra Selene are with Octavian and brought to Adia and Octavia. The children are led away. Octavian tells Adia that Antony is dead. Adia hardly reacts. Adia then stands and thanks him and congratulates him. He is basically the king. Octavian corrects that it is a first citizen, and he's glad she's not upset. Adia says she has no intention of grieving. Octavian then sits next to Octavia, and she asks about these children. Octavian asks if Octavia can care for Antony's children. And Octavia says there is no end to Octavian's cleverness. She asks about murdering Caesarion. Not yet. Soon, I hope. Oh. She's just really embracing that rotten soul.
The classic family conversations.
Pullo, Varinus, and Caesarion hang out. This is actually tough for me to say, knowing what's coming next. Pullo prepares to kill some soldiers at the stop. Varinus says, "Hold on, we can talk our way out of this." And it just really seems like a classic dynamic that they have done this hundreds of times before, when literally I don't think that's ever happened in the show, but their chemistry just implies that. Pullo thinks that Caesarion is going to give them away, but Varinus has a pretty good alibi. They're grain merchants. Caesarion says that his name is Aeneas, the mythical founder of Rome. The soldiers progenitor of Rome. The soldiers let them pass, and then the captain speaks in Egyptian, honoring Caesarion, to which Caesarion responds in Egyptian that he will be remembered well. Pullo says, "Told you." Cue fight scene. Varinus gets stabbed, but all the Roman soldiers get killed. Varinus collapses after he and Pullo smile at their hard work. Pullo says it's just a scratch. Varinus says that he's done. "Take me home. I want to see my children. I don't want to die here," except he says something a little edgier. A month later, Octavia's children, or I should say Antonia, is laughing and playing with Antony's children. Octavia asks Adia if she's chosen a dress, but Adia is despondent. She says she is not going to whatever Octavia is talking about. There's a lot of smoke of hemp, assumingly, is around them, is my assumption. Octavia says that it's as much Adia's triumph as Octavian's. "All my life, I've watched you strive for this moment. Look at you. I don't know what I shall do if you give up." And it's that great Oscar Wilde quote. There's only two tragedies in life. One is not getting what one wants. The other is getting it. The newsreader announces the celebration of Octavian and the restoration of the Roman Republic. Fun lie there. Pullo, Caesarion, and a pale Varinus ride through Rome. Pullo bursts into the Collegium at breakfast, and he tells everyone except the family to get out. He introduces Aeneas, who says blessings to everyone, like some kind of foreign exchange students. Pullo says he brought Varinus home, and that he wants to see the children, and he's grievously wounded, probably going to die. Lyde tends to him. Pullo notes that he should have died weeks ago, and then Varinus wakes up. Pullo says, you're awake then, make up your mind. Varinus asks where the children are. Pullo says to lie still. Varinus reasons they don't want to see him. I understand. That's all right. They're stubborn. Stubborn like their mother. Varina the Elder watches him, and Varinus calls Pullo over. He hears the horns of the triumph. That's funny. I thought I was dying. Varinus takes Pullo's hand, and then Varina the Elder walks in, and she kisses Varinus's cheek. He touches her face. Varina the Younger and Lucius walk in. Crosscut to Varinus's eye and the opening of a door with light. Anyone just have any words they want to say here?
Was it raining inside anyone else's apartment, or is it just me? I'm not joking. I cried. It hit me pretty good.
I was pretty emotional.
No words could describe how I was feeling.
Listen, I want to talk about this for my favorite moment. I'm sure it's a lot of people's other favorite moments, but that's why I'm withholding.
Okay, all good, all good. Mm-hmm. Livia announces that the ladies should be ready and tells Octavia that she's sorry Aunt Adia can't be there. Octavian likes everything just so. Livia says that they'll stand in order of precedence, and then Adia walks in. Hello, ladies. Adia stands before Livia, and Livia's like... Actually, I should go first. Wife takes precedence. And Adia says, she doesn't care. She's not going to let a vicious little trollop walk ahead of her. If that's a British slur, someone please tell me and I will censor that. Adia says that she sees her. You're thinking you're going to destroy me. Remember, far better women than you have sworn to do the same. Go look for them now. And that is the nicest thing she has ever said about Servilia while also getting in a final jab.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, that's a bit of respect on Servilia's name.
It also occurred to me at this moment that Octavian married a younger version of Adia. So funny. Jacob, you have a thought?
Freudian.
This scene frustrates me. It frustrates me, I say, because like... I feel like the show is trying to make us sympathize with Adia a whole lot over these last couple episodes, and especially this one. And her like little short, like, I don't know, tirade to Livia is really good and really convincing. And I was like, yeah, screw you, Livia. And then the scene ends. I'm like, I don't dislike Livia. Actually, I hate Atia. Why is this show making me think I should like Atia? Atia's done horrible, horrible things, and she deserves what's happening to her right now.
Yeah, so it worked on YouTube. They tricked us into rooting for her, and I don't know how they did it.
Yeah.
But like immediately after, I was like, wait, no, never mind.
I want to throw in a counter to this. I genuinely think that if the show went on for more than two seasons, there is the possibility that we would actually get to see a bit more depth to this arc for Adia that would make us want to root for her a bit more towards this moment. However, the issue is that because we have only seen her do the horrible things, and in the last few episodes, because of how much they've had to skip over in time, just turn on a dime like that, is basically kind of losing the moment almost. And I don't know if that would have happened with a couple extra seasons with more development of this. It probably wouldn't. We probably would still hate Adia. But I would like to throw in that that is the likely possibility as to why we're not feeling the satisfaction that I think the writers are wanting us to feel.
Yeah. I gotta say, and I think we've all given it at various points, I'm getting real tired of this defense of, man, this probably wouldn't have happened if the show hadn't been canceled. It's like, yeah, but it was. So, you know, yeah, let's talk about what we were given, not what we
could have gotten. It is the reality we have.
Yeah.
Very true.
Let's see. The door opens. The crowd cheers. The masses cheer. They hold weird portraits of Octavian, assumingly. Doesn't look much like him. Octavian rides on a chariot through them. A lot of guy liner on. Too much? I can definitely tell at a distance. The people cheer, Caesar, Caesar, Caesar. Octavian takes a seat. He smiles. Agrippa casts a glance at Octavia, who looks at him too. Please, God, let this happen. Adia watches an effigy of Mark Antony ride past them. Octavian and his mother share a glance, and then Adia looks to where Antony's chariot follows. Octavian plays a game by himself, and Pullo walks in. Octavian thought Pullo was dead, but Octavian is glad to see him alive. Old friends are a rare commodity. Octavian asks about Caesarion, and Pullo says he killed him in the desert. He brought his head to show him, but it went bad, so he tossed it. Octavian, I think, kind of laughs and is like, yeah, this is something that Pullo would do. Octavian asks then about Varinus, and Pullo says that he didn't make it. Octavian says he'll want a reward, and Pullo says, haven't thought about it. Wouldn't say no. Pullo walks out, and the Rome theme plays. Pullo tells Caesarion that Octavian bought it. Caesarion says, brother Osiris, let me live so I can spit in his face. Pullo says to shut up about that blather. Caesarion says that he won't rest until he avenges his mother and lives up to his father's name. Listen, about your father. And, Jacob.
Okay, I have to say this. I would prefer to keep this till like my whole episode remarks. Yeah. But I have so much to say, I have to say it now. There are many critiques I have of this episode and this season, but there's some things that it does well, and there is a very, very incredible, great reward here in this final moment, in that it is spent with Titus Pullo, because here in the final scenes of the season, we see the end of the Republic, right? Not to like spoil the history that we'll talk about here shortly, but like Octavian is becoming the first citizen. He's becoming the emperor of Rome. The Republic is dead here. And if we recall back to season one, like there's literally, I think it's like episode two, episode three, Titus Pullo, the man who brought down the Republic.
And oh,
so
yeah.
So it's only fitting that on the day the Republic it finally has the final nail hammered into it, that we end with the man responsible for that.
I totally forgot that.
Very, very beautiful.
Yeah.
I like the final moment of this because you always say, oh, I wish we would get to see Caesarion's reactions to him finding out who his true father is. I'm glad that we don't, because that kind of just leaves it up to the interpretation of the audience, especially because I do know what happens to Caesarion in real life, in history. I became aware of that as soon as this episode ended. I was like, yeah, I probably think this happened. And then I Googled it, and I was like, yep.
He went to a farm upstate. You know, Cole, I think it is worth asking, you know, vibe check on the final scene of Rome?
I liked it, but I gotta say, there's a part of me that feels like it would have been more fitting if, like, this was, like, the scene with Pullo was like the penultimate scene, or like it has them like walk by like the newsreader, and our last shot is him just like spouting some. You laugh. I feel like that genuinely would have been kind of cool to show, like, mm-hmm. No matter like what happens, like what big stuff happens in the show, it's like newsreader still reading the news. The citizens are still walking by and listening. Yeah. For the average citizen, not mm-hmm. much has changed.
Yeah. Or even the newsreader announcing the sweeping policy changes that are to occur. I do see that, Cole. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I will talk to you guys something about later about writing fan fiction. I shouldn't have said it like that. Anyways, question for BP and Cole, and you know Jacob and I will answer this too. I actually didn't write up any of my thoughts. Oh my god. The thing all of us will answer is, in your opinion, did Rome stick the landing, or in other words, did it have a satisfying conclusion? Now, Cole and BP will go and chat about that among themselves for a little bit. Jacob and I will talk about some history, and then we'll all come back together and get through the rest of the ep. Jacob, how are you feeling about the history of this episode?
I thought the history was fine. It was fine. You know, it took its liberties, I think, here and there sparingly, but yeah. For the most part, in the grand scheme of the big hitters, which there were probably several of, but you could say it was good. I mean, we didn't depict Actium, but like,
yeah,
Actium happened. We get, I meant to comment during the episode about Mark Antony and Cleopatra's suicide being like Romeo and Juliet, but that happened. I mean, more or less to like, you know, again, how it happened in reality from what we know, like,
yeah,
Antony killed himself because he thought Cleopatra had killed herself, but she hadn't. What else here? I remember catching them say first citizen for the first time. I was like, I know what that means.
Yeah.
They could have just said princeps, but I know what that means.
I kind of wish they did say princeps, honestly, but yeah.
I kind of wish they would have just said emperor for reasons I'll talk about at the series review.
Okay.
But first citizen works as well. It just isn't immediately obvious what it means unless you know. The grand scheme of things, everything is like mostly right, right? I mean, Octavian wins. Antony and Cleopatra die. Her children are brought to Rome, minus Caesarion. I think Caesarion does get the old axe. BP Googled it. I don't remember off the top of my head. So
right, yeah. No, Caesarion did not make it out alive. In IRL, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I guess those are the only really big moments. It kind of tied up personal characters as well this episode, so I think that was my gist of things.
Yeah. Well, I'll go ahead and talk about the history here. In Death of the Roman Republic, Chapter 18, Antony, Octavian, and Actium, and in Chapter 19, Death of the Roman Republic, because really this, I mean, I could spend this whole section rereading those old scripts, but no, if you would actually just like to learn more, and I guess the show is fairly accurate and they chose some directions and creative liberties and stuff, yada yada, but Chapter 18 and Chapter 19 of my main series covers all that, so you can go back and listen to that at your leisure. So, Colin BP, and later Jacob and I, in your individual opinion, did HBO's Rome stick the landing? Did it have a satisfying conclusion?
I think they ended it as well as they could have, and stuck it better than I expected. For what we were given, I think that given that the show was canceled during the writing process of season 2, I am not saying every aspect of this episode works in execution, but I think that they had a lot of good character ending moments that could have been in a much worse position given the constraints that they were handed.
This may come as a surprise from a known hater of the penultimate episode, but I actually really liked this episode. Mm-hmm. I feel like in most ways it stuck the landing. I'm a big fan. It wasn't perfect. There are some things I've written down that we'll talk about, you know, a little later that I found issue with. But overall, I was pretty happy with it. And I'm okay with this being the end.
I have very complicated feelings about it. And without like talking about the series too much as a whole, I'll just leave it to, as a show about Rome, about the Roman Republic and its downfall, I think it is marginal on whether or not it sticks the landing. Okay. But as a show about interesting characters and an interesting timepiece and the dynamics that they have and their strong connections and growth, I think it does stick the landing. I think it's quite good, actually. So I don't know. If you were to take that nuanced take and put it all together, I would say Rome lands, but it's not a clean dismount. To put it in gymnastics terms, I believe.
All right. Let's see here. I have a similar answer to BP Jacob. I think I will say it shortly that given the circumstances of production, I think Rome did the best it could in terms of sticking its landing. But I do not think, even after a second rewatch in hindsight, I don't think Rome has a satisfying conclusion, in my opinion. And we'll explicate that more on that later. But guys, how about we move into least favorite moments of the episode? And I am going to imagine everyone's bringing at least one, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
I got a few.
All right.
I got one.
Cole, how many do you have?
I have like 3 or 4. They're like small things, so it's not like I just like hated a whole bunch of stuff.
All right, so we'll go Cole, BP, Cole, K, Cole, Jacob, okay?
Okay, so one that we talked about a little bit before, no Posca in this episode. I really feel like we lost out on something there. He's been like a good like side character throughout the show. Like we've grown to like him as we've gotten to know him, and it's just like a real disappointment that he just wasn't there for this.
Yeah. BP.
Miley's favorite moment was Varinus's death for a couple of different reasons. One,
blasphemy.
I was just sad. No. Here's the thing. Part of it is just one, I was just sad Varinus was going. So that's like why I'm just kind of like, it's emotional. It's hitting every emotional beat, but it's not my favorite moment because of how much it's hitting my emotions with it. You know what I mean?
Coward. Let the emotions make it your best scene.
And I also just don't love that he doesn't get all of the closure with his family. I wish that there was just some way that he could have gotten a chance to finally explain what happened to Niobe, even if in the end the kids don't forgive him. Cole, I told you, I made note of all of this while I was watching the episode. I just didn't say anything.
He's taking the words out of my mouth that I said in the breakout room. I'm outraged.
Stolen valor!
He's quoting me almost.
I said that there were similarities in my notes in the breakout room. Anyways, I just don't love that there's not a major closure with that. It's just my emotional part of my brain is like, yes, this is so well acted by Kevin McKidd, etc. But some of the there's just some things that aren't satisfying with it.
I couldn't disagree more, but I guess I'll expound on that later.
All right, Cole, back to you.
I'll bring up a different one. I will address like the main part of my complaints about that, and then I'll move on to another one real quick. The main issue I had with that scene was just like, I wish that there'd been more like closure on Varinus, like talking to his family, just like his last like apology as he's done. I wish they'd given that a little more than just what we got.
Okay.
But another thing we talked some about, Adia, I feel like she won in the end of this episode, and I don't like that. And they tricked me into being happy about it for a bit, and I like that even less.
Okay.
She did at least begrudgingly win. Like, her son feels no type of way towards her, and she feels alienated and like could care less about her son. And Anthony's dead, her lover. So like, she's kind of she is lost continuously along the way, but it is still a little annoying to see her, you know, victorious at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Jacob, would you like to share your least favorite?
Yes, my least favorite moment of this episode comes very early on. After the Battle of Actium, we see a very defeated, a very broken man in Mark Antony, and it sucks because it is so unearned. Because Mark Antony is a very, very strong character in every sense of that adjective, strong. We have not really ever seen him broken. We've seen him like fully bearded and like back against the wall fighting Octavian, but we did not see him broken. We saw him with, you know, grit and ability to get through it. And so due to the fast pace of these final episodes and this final season, to see Antony so immediately just like defeated and like, oh, guess I'll kill myself after a battle that we don't even get to see on screen is like, it just robs us of how good that moment could be. Because to see Antony get worn down and finally get to that place, that would be rewarding. But just like less than 10 minutes in the episode, just see him be, oh, guess I lost. Yes, this is it, is like, it just pains me because it could have been so good. And it's unearned, like I said.
If I may add on just a slightly bit more there, Jacob, it's like basically we don't see the actual event that finally does break Antony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And even then, we barely see any lead up to the events that actually break Antony because he wanted the war in the first place. Like, that's something he was on board with anyway. And he wanted to be in Egypt. That's something he was on board with anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Jacob, great point there. Cole, did you have one other to share?
I did. I have one more. And it's the reasoning behind Varinus getting stabbed. Like, when they go to that, like, guard post. And because Caesarion, I feel like, prior to this scene, has shown himself to be, like, a pretty smart, politically savvy kid. Like, he knows the score. Like, when they're talking about Octavian, he's like, yeah, that guy's going to kill me because, like, there can't be more than one son of Caesar. He's a smart kid. So why does he just blatantly reply to this guard when he knows, like, every, like, Roman soldier is planning on killing him? Like, it felt like they made him, like, a stupid kid for no reason.
I don't know, man. I think that what we see us as Aryan, I think it's justified.
I think he's prideful,
Yeah.
and to be referred to in Egyptian strikes at his pride, and he's like, I'm Egyptian. I'm actually the son of a goddess, you know.
Yeah.
So that's my interpretation at least.
Cole, though, my least favorite scene relates to yours and BP's there. It is Varinus getting stabbed and then being like, I'm done, and then being alive a month later. That's like, maybe I sound kind of CinemaSins here and like overly critical, but that seems just kind of stupid to me because honestly, if you just get rid of the title card that says explicitly a month has passed, it would have been perfect. Varinus gets
Absolutely.
stabbed. An indeterminate
Yeah.
amount of time has passed, but however long it was, he fights through it to be delivered to his family. And Rome plays with distance all of the time. Several characters just teleport between France and Italy, like throughout the series and episodes. And like, it's never brought up that this takes weeks or months when you're crossing the Alps. So like, why do you need to add a title card for that? That annoys me.
Yeah, I definitely see
Yeah.
that, especially because like if you're living for a whole month longer,
Right.
it makes that even weirder for Varinus to say, because he's not like a man who's easily defeated, obviously. And he's suffered an injury that apparently he can survive for a month. He's like, oh, that's it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually had that thought like when he was like, take me to my children. I was like, I was thinking like it would be a few months. I was like, either you're gonna be dead by the time you get there or you'll be fine. So I feel like nothing about this makes
And it
sense.
doesn't even cut directly back to him. It cuts to Octavia a month later, and I don't know. It's just that it's a weird like asymmetry on both sides of that.
So, fellas, favorite moment of De Patre Vostro. I will go last because I'm 100% confident that no one's going to say my answer.
I'm now 100% confident no one's gonna say my answer because we kind of just ragged on it.
Hey, I liked that scene aside from just one aspect of it.
Gotcha.
But in that case, I can go first.
I also said real quick, Cole, sorry to interrupt. I said that the scene hit me emotionally. That was part of the reason why it was my least favorite to see a character
That's a
go.
bad
Oh, I'm
reason. I'm
sorry.
sorry. That's a bad reason. But we press on.
My favorite scene of the episode is not a scene at all. It is, in fact, the biggest dog to ever do it in this show, Mr. James Purefoy. That man ate and left no crumbs. Every scene he was in, I was like, I'm in. I love this. Like that first scene where he like has that speech about like losing the battle, and he's like, yeah, it's not so bad. It's like it does feel kind of unearned, but like just that speech, I was
Oh,
like,
yeah.
you know, this is like an early contender for favorite scene. I loved this. And
And he's
then
got two more left in him.
exactly. Then he has his whole spiel with Cleopatra, and I was like, oh my God. And then the scene where he kills himself, it's like the man cannot be stopped. He alone has to be my favorite thing about this episode. He was fantastic. He didn't miss.
To piggyback off of for Cole, my favorite scene specifically is Antony's death. And I think that it was just, no pun intended, so well executed. Because, one, James Purefoy, as Cole has already mentioned, mwah, chef's kiss. I love just the interaction between him and Varinus. And Antony just giving that snarky response back, being like, was it actually an honor when Varinus says it was an honor serving with you? I would say if Varinus says it's an honor serving with you, that means it is, because Antony is just kind of like, if it was, so be it, or whatever his ending line was. But I think that it was just such a well-executed scene. I think that there is such a good dynamic between Varinus and Antony. Just to see how far those two have come together is really just, it's a. If I ever revisit Rome, it's a moment I cannot wait to go back to. Cole looks like he wants to try to do something to be like, no, that's not what he said.
Maybe a little bit. I would just say when you said when Verena says it's been an honor serving you, and you said Antony's snarky reply, was it? I don't view that reply as like snarky at all. I view that as like
No.
a sincere, like a genuine moment of like was it like you actually like it was an honor, like that was like a gratifying moment for him, and he was kind of like in a bit of disbelief. So I don't think there was any snark behind it. That was all.
Absolutely. I
The
love that
problem
line so
is that
much.
he responds that way to pretty much every question with a bit more snark to it. That's why it kind of comes off that way, even when someone's being genuine to him. That's kind of why it's hard to tell sometimes. I can see that, but still, banger scene.
That line in particular, the was it? I think is so phenomenal because it's a great characterization of Anthony yet again, and like showing him in a way we don't see him ever before, and that's like self-reflecting on his life and his like service, and like being unsure and being realizing maybe I'm like, you know, all of this, look at us around us in this palace with this these orgies. Was it an honor to you, Varinus? I'm on the wrong side of history. I'm losing this battle. Was it an honor? And that kind of like reflection is not something we see Anthony do. And it's chef's kiss, as BP said. My favorite scene is Varinus's death because it's, I think, is a beautiful conclusion to a very long and tumultuous story arc that is Varinus, because our introduction to Varinus is not, I mean, I don't know, I wouldn't say it's the greatest one. Like episode two, he returns, episode two, the whole series, he returns from war in the Gauls to see his family basically for the first time ever, while they're like his children are sentient beings. And he treats them rudely, and his family doesn't really like him being there. And we see him win over Niobe's love again and kind of his family's trust. And he loses it all again because Niobe kills herself, and he maybe is at fault for making Niobe think that Varinus was going to kill her anyway. And to see him go through all the lows he has gone through this season, which were pretty extreme, Varinus, woof, and then at the very end see that his family does like kind of accept him back on his dying moments. It's very touching. It's very lovely. And I disagree with earlier critiques on how like they don't get like any final conclusion on Niobe, because as Verena the Elder is standing there staring through the slats on the door, peering in, the reason she comes in is not just because it's Varinus and Varinus is dying. It's because he sees Varinus talking about Niobe with love and like looking at the portrait, I believe. And it's that moment that like convinces, you know, Verena the Elder that, oh, this person who I, you know, blamed for my mother's death actually had a lot of love and care for her. And even though like we don't see much else, we don't see the other family come on screen, and we don't see like an explicit forgiveness, I think it's really powerful. And I've always thought that Varinus is like one of the best characters in the entire show. And so I'm just a bit of a schmuck anyway when it comes to like character deaths and those. I just love it when shows have the balls to kill off characters because it makes me really sad. And I don't know. I just always think it's so powerful. And again, here, I think it's powerful. And I did cry a little bit. And that is my favorite scene of the show. Not the show, the episode. I don't know what my favorite scene of the show is. I didn't mean to say that. You guess.
So you like shows that kill off their characters, like Gilmore Girls, I assume, right?
Yep, that's the best one.
All right. Well said, Jacob. Well said. That wouldn't surprise me if that'd be your favorite scene of the whole show, but anyways. All right, guys, I'll go ahead and share my favorite episode. I'm glad someone talked about Antony. I'm glad someone talked about Varinus, because I know what no one was going to talk about this. I like Adia's ending for the reasons that others have said, and it's like she has been an ultra villain this entire series, basically. At the end, she's getting this, I won't say redemption arc, I will say pity arc, that the show
Sure.
puts her in these circumstances that make you pity her. But at the end, she puts Livia in her place. in a way that, again, compliments Servilia, which I do legitimately really like. Better women than you have tried. Where are they now? Adiatuti. She looks at the effigy of Antony. Like, as you guys said yourselves, Adia wins, but she feels no joy. She gets everything she wants. She isn't happy. The literal last we see of her in the show, in this universe, is looking toward her dead lover and into the past, and her son is triumphant, living right next to her like she always wanted. But as I said, I am a sucker for this theme that there are only two tragedies in life. One is not getting what one wants, and the other is getting it. And that's what occurs to Adia, that she has everything and yet has nothing. And I, you know, I'm not saying that because I like Adia's character. I say that because that is fitting for her character.
Well put.
And with that, we will have some other thoughts to share in a season 2 review and series review. But with all that being said,
friends,
we didn't do any of our sign-offs.
Oh, that's shoot.
We'll fix it in post.
We'll fix it in post. If you would like to learn more about the Roman history, I'm so mad. That was going to be such a sweet moment.
It was going
to
be great.
If you would like to learn more about the history behind this episode, as I said earlier, and as I totally skipped the history section, listen to Death of the Roman Republic, Chapter 18, Antony, Octavian, and Actium. Listen to Chapter 19, Death of the Roman Republic. And if you want to learn more about the history of Octavian's rule, listen to Chapter 20, Imperator Caesar Divifilius Augustus. Who is that, you may ask? Listen to find out.
You can follow me on God. X at BP Movie Review Hour and on Letterboxd BP Movie Review Hour. Follow my podcast, The BP Movie Review Hour, on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts.
I think I just experienced a small earthquake.
Ah,
wow.
My desk was shaking. That's not what I wanted my sign off to be. I wanted to say, go be the Varinus you want to be in this world. It is easier said than done, but to live a life with red hair boldly is better than to live a life with no hair meekly.
What?
It would be so funny if I just transitioned to the end without getting to Cole.
Honestly, that's kind of what I was expecting. I don't really have anything.
All right. With all that being said,
friends.
Oh.
Romans.
Countrymen.
I hope you enjoyed the
show. Enjoyed the show.
I pointed up and there's no one above you for me.
Oh, really? Oh, BP was above me. Okay.
I was waiting for that for like the next episode, like the final season 2 episode that we're doing.
Well, do it again!